Representatives Chair McKepnick.
Here.
Kreit.
Here.
Senators Quine, Dotsenrod, Mr. Hardmeyer. Mr. Rauschenberger?
Here.
Ms. Sharp?
Here.
You have quorum?
Second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Representative Kreit, seconded by Commissioner Rauschenberger. Yeah, just a voice. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Okay, Dave, I guess we can get up and, sorry I'm late.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. For the record, my name is Dave Hunter. I serve as the Executive Director and Chief Investment Officer for the Retirement Investment Office. To my left is Darren Schultz, serves as our Deputy CIO, and in that capacity or as interim CIO for the last 5 years. I've got a 52-page deck. I don't intend, is that better? Got a 52-page deck. Don't intend to cover every page, hopefully about a third of it, but happy to take any questions along the way. Today I was asked to speak to the budget stabilization and legacy fund with regards to investment balances, specifically with regards to the impact of transfers to the general fund and legacy fund, looking at asset allocation, actual versus expected results, net investment returns for both the periods ended June 30th and September 30th. I'm also going to look at investment fees and expenses for the last two fiscal years, and then also look at the investment policy statement. If I could have you turn to page 4, where we have a roll forward of the budget stabilization fund from inception to date. It includes the funding, income, and disbursement history. The first column you see is the new money in. That's about $99 million going back to 2006. If you just continue on down, 2008, about $100 million. 2010, about $129 million. 2012, about $61 million. And 2014, $181 million. Altogether, it's about $560 million, $567 million that's been contributed over the last 12 years. The next column over to the right is really, it's called net increase. It really represents net income of the budget stabilization for each one of those fiscal years ended. The last number, fiscal year 2017, that's just the number for the last 3 months, for the 3 months ended 9/30/16. During the last 12 years, the net income of the fund, budget stabilization fund, is approximately about $83.6 million. Income distributions out during that time period, about $73 million. So the main point is that over the last decade, or over the last 12 years, the budget stabilization fund has grew to exceed approximately $578 million as of September 30th, 2016. The next slide.
Second.
Yep.
Any questions? Okay. On the way we took this out now, is because it isn't going out all out yet, what is the balance in that fund right now and stuff on it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, if I could have you flip to the next page.
Oh, okay.
On page 5, what we do have a roll for it is just for the October 31st, 2016. The balance is $203.6 million. So the October update is that real transferred $375 million in the month of October to the general fund via the treasurer's office. And just, you know, $578 million, back out $375 million, we get to the $203 million. So I believe that addresses your question, okay. Mr. Chairman. The other point that we want to address is kind of how we're handling the Bank of North Dakota Match Loan CD program. We actually have begun to transfer that program from the Budget Stabilization Fund to the Legacy Fund. If you look in the green arrows, we transferred actually about $29.6 million. So the amount that still remains in the budget stabilization is the amount that's up there, $47.6 million. And the balance of it is cash, cash equivalents, and short-term investments. So we'll just pause for a moment, see if there's any questions on that page.
Okay, go ahead.
Page 6 outlines our asset allocation for the budget stabilization fund. It's really short-term fixed income and Bank of North Dakota CDs. The main thing I want to emphasize on this page is that actual asset allocations are very close to target. We're generally within 0.2% if you look at the chart there between actual and target. So very, very close. asset allocation, number one driver of long-term investment returns. We always want to make sure we're close to where we're at. And we're very, very close, as you see on this page. When we complete the process, if I could have you transfer to the next page, page 7. When we complete the transfer of transferring the BND match loan CDs from the budget stabilization to the legacy fund, the asset allocation policy will effectively be on this page and represent, again, 100% short-term fixed income without any BND CDs. I think it's important to always emphasize what our asset allocation is. It serves to drive our policy benchmark return. So when we step back and say, how are we doing from an actual investment return standpoint versus a benchmark, it takes into account what our actual policy benchmark is. So here our policy benchmark is 100% short-term fixed income. That policy benchmark we then use on page 8 to determine how we're doing versus a benchmark. So I'm going to focus on for the 5 years ended, because that's generally what we look at over the longer term. So for the 5 years ended September 30th, 2016, the Budget Stabilization Fund returned a net return of about 2.03% as boxed in that on that page in blue. Immediately below that is the policy benchmark return. So that's what we would have expected to earn if we were just investing in kind of passive investments during that point in time, not seeking any active management return. That's pretty significant. So 2.03%, backing off the policy benchmark return of 0.69, shows that we generated about an excess return of about 1.34%. On a dollar basis over the last 5 years, that translates into about $30 million, about $5 to $6 million a year over the last 5 years. More recently, for the 1 year ended 9/30/16, we generated a net return of about 1.97%, again, very close to 2%. You'll see that the policy benchmark return actually has increased. The reason why that is, as I think everyone knows, short-term and long-term rates have been increasing significantly. It's more and more challenging to invest in fixed income. As a result, our excess return has declined a little bit. Having said that, still 83 basis points of excess return is still very, very strong. For the last year, that approximates about $4.5 million. The other point to emphasize is we're doing this on a very risk-controlled basis. It's highlighted in the brown column, the 0.66 versus 0.47. We're very close to our standard deviation expected, and we actually have a positive risk-adjusted excess return for the 5 years ending 9/30/16 of about 78 bips.
Any questions, committee? One of the things that, this has been, and we've... doing on these fixed income, we're not getting a lot of, and it's 35% of our portfolio and stuff on it. Do you think a person should start looking into this, I don't know if it, just looking out, what we've kind of been seeing here, the last few, it's really changed, it changes so fast anymore and stuff on it, but I just, do you think a person should start looking out a little, on, probably not the equity side, we can take a look, but like on the fixed income side, and I don't know, committee, if you got any suggestions, but it does, because it is, we're no risk, or some risk, but not much in it, and I'm just wondering what, because this is something that, as more money, or 35%, I'm guessing, what's that, just about $2 billion somewhere in there? Part of our, dollar-wise is somewhere right in there and stuff on it. That'd be half. So it wouldn't be that much, but it'd be $1 billion something. It'd be, we got in equities or in fixed income. Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so this is the Budget Stabilization Fund. We're going to talk next about Legacy Fund.
Oh, okay.
I apologize, I haven't emphasized that point.
No, this one won't.
So for this standpoint, it is 100% short-term fixed income. It's a very valid question. We'll address that here shortly when we move to the legacy fund.
I keep thinking that thing's already zeroed out, and so it just, in my mind, it's gone.
Still have 200, still have $203 million, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Yeah.
So the next slide is just dealing with kind of the 1 and 5 year returns on a gross basis.
Yeah.
I think everybody understands that. This, for the page 10, we have returns for the 1, 3, and 5 years ended June 30th, 2016. Just for a color coding, green is good. Green is where we're beating a benchmark. Yellow is where we're falling shy of a benchmark. In general, there's a lot of green on this page, which is great. If you focus for the 5 years ended June 30, 2016, we beat our benchmark by about 1.22%. The actual net return was about 1.9. But overall, our fixed income managers are doing what we expect them to do. If we have a challenge in anywhere, it's in cash and cash equivalents, and that's just because it's so hard to earn any real type of return on cash, but the vast majority is turning out very well. Okay. The next page, this will be one of the near the last pages for the budget stabilization, is focusing on investment fees and expenses. A lot of numbers on this page. The main point of this is that investment fees and expenses as a percentage of overall budget stabilization assets have remained pretty flat at about 15 basis points, 0.15%. That's highlighted in green. If you want to talk about an absolute dollar perspective, it's kind of highlighted in brown for the last two fiscal years, $737,000 for the fiscal year ended 2015, June 30, 2015, and about $748,000 for the fiscal year ended 2016. We've got a pretty good return on our investment dollars. That $748,000 in fiscal year 2016 actually generated excess return over a benchmark of about $1.5 million. So but better than a two-for-one return on our investments, so that's pretty good. You know, at end of the day, the budget stabilization fund was preservation of capital with some incremental return. It's achieved that over the last one, three, five-year periods. I'll just pause for a moment.
Well, like I said, I think we're going to, you know, there'll probably be some money in this fund again sometime here, but like I said, for the near term, it's good information. We were at least staying in the green. We weren't digging into the capital on it, and I guess that's the main goal of what was charged with this fund. It was, any questions? Okay, continue on.
Very good. Next few pages are the investment policy statement, which we really haven't changed. The last change that we did make to this was actually on August of 2016. Actually, this board had approved it probably prior to that in June or July, in which I'll just cover it just for clarity. It's just on June 15, 2016, the advisory board acknowledged REAL's stated intent to transfer the BND match loan CD program to the legacy fund, and that's what we're in the process of doing. So I had no other prepared remarks for the budget stabilization fund at this time.
No, continue.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'll have you turn to page 17. Page 17 has a roll forward of the legacy fund from inception to date. Again, that first column, new money in, shows how much cash was received into the legacy fund each fiscal year. You see for the first year, it was about $396 million. For 2013, about $791 million. 2014, $907 million. Fiscal year 2015, a little over $1 billion. And fiscal year 2016, it was about $434.8 million. And then for the 3 months, July, August, and September of 2017, the actual cash contributions were little under $100 million. The column to the right represents income, net income, not necessarily earnings as defined for North Dakota Century Code purposes, but net income, including unrealized gains and losses, approximates a little over $400 million. So on the far right, the main point is that we have a little over $4 billion in the legacy fund as of September 30th, 2016, of which about $3.6 billion represents contributions, and about $400 million represents net income.
Okay, questions? Okay, go ahead.
The next page, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, page 18, deals with the impact of the BND match loan CD program on the legacy fund. Highlighted in blue, you'll see that REAL transferred approximately $29.6 million. Actually, that transfer occurred in October. We will look to continue to make transfers over the course of the next several months so that to deplete the BND match loan CD program within the budget stabilization, it will remain within the legacy fund going forward, as previously acknowledged by this board, as previously acknowledged by the State Investment Board as well.
See, and that's up to 250, or what did we cast, or didn't we, or was it a percentage, or how did...
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, it was stated as a percentage from an asset allocation perspective. Yeah. I think if we were to go back to the minutes of the State Investment Board, the last time a number was referenced, it was $200 million. The current size of the program is roughly about $78 to $79 million, although I believe there is some prospective activity in the works at this point in time. The only other point I wanted to emphasize here is we are investing some short-term cash with the Bank of North Dakota over the course of legacy fund, insurance trust, all the SIB clients. It's probably in the neighborhood of about $30 to $40 million at this point in time. It's an attractive risk-adjusted rate of return. Appreciate working with Mr. Hardmeyer and Mr. Porter at the BND in order to help our returns going forward. It's relatively small in the legacy fund. It's a little under $6 million. That's highlighted in blue. Mm-hmm.
And that just started, basically?
Started fairly recently. I don't know the exact date, but in the last 3 to 4 months. Oh, actually in September, I think, is when it started, per the footnote. So, The next
page. Oh, yeah, okay, initial funding, September 7th.
If I could only read my own presentation, it'd be helpful. Page 19 just summarizes again kind of the timeline. I put it there in case there's new members that join going forward, but it just kind of outlines how we've transitioned the legacy fund over the last several years to where we're at now. The transition policy and fully is fully implemented at this point in time. If you look at page 20, you'll actually see how we move from a 100% short-term fixed income allocation to its current equity allocation of 50%, 30% within broad U.S. equity, 20% in broad international, the 35%, Mr. Chairman, that you referenced for fixed income, and the remaining 15% in what I would call real assets, including 10% diversified real assets and 5% core real estate. At this point in time, I don't think there's any need to do any additional asset allocation work at this point in time. Having said that, over the course of the next 6 to 9 months, Darren, Eric, and I will work with the State Investment Board to continue to review the asset allocation policy, and probably at the conclusion of the upcoming legislative session, it will be a prime time for us to reconsider our asset allocation going forward. In general, when we look at our pension clients, we do it about every 5 years. If you consider and set back, you know, when did this fund start? It was back in 2012. We're coming up 2017 onto the 5 year time period. So I think that's good governance, good policy, and good practice.
Well, just like I said earlier on the fixed income side, it just, and it's the conversation we had when this thing was all fixed income at one time, we're still balancing that risk reward concept and stuff on it. But the next 5 years, we need to look where we're at and if it pays to keep that percentage out there or what. And so I don't envision spending a lot of money, you know, hiring people to do it, but to see where we're at and stuff to come up with, you know, just review it, I guess, study it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the existing contract we have with our existing consultant, Callen, allows us to have two projects every fiscal year. So we have the ability to do something like an asset liability study for the legacy fund if we chose to do that between a July 1, 2017 and June 30, 2018 timeframe with quote unquote no additional incremental costs. So it's something will come into play. But that's it. Totally understood. But listen, fixed income serves as a wonderful risk diversifier, a good part of any long-term investment allocation.
Yep.
So page 21 just highlights the market valuations of the various asset classes as of September 30th, 2016. Excuse me, the main point I wanted to emphasize here again is that we're very focused on asset allocation. We're always within 1 or 2%. The green arrow highlights for large cap equity, we're a little bit 0.5% under allocated for large cap, 21.5% versus 22. If you look at fixed income, our actual largest asset allocation, a little under allocated there. Where we're actually a little over allocated is in real estate, about 6.1 versus 5. So real estate is a private asset. We can't pull money in and out every month. It's a kind of a long term. Real estate's done very well over the last year to 12 to 18 months, and as a result of that, it has a little bit of a higher asset allocation. Overall, very close, 1 to 2%. We're staying true to our words. So.
Okay, any questions? Okay, continue on, Dave.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, on page 22, I have the 1, 3, and 5 year returns for the legacy fund as of September 30th, 2016. I'm going to focus on the 5 years ended 9/30/2016 first. You'll see in that blue box about a return of almost 3.5% versus a policy benchmark of 2.5, generating excess return of about 97 bips or 0.9%. If you were to apply that over the average assets over the last 5 years, that approximates about $85 million of incremental income that we've earned by using active management prudently. Mm-hmm. So pretty significant. Most notably for the 1 year ended 9/30/16 is extremely strong. We generated a net return of about 10.18% versus the policy benchmark of 8.85. That's about a 1.34% return. That's a very hard number to maintain. I'm generally feeling more comfortable with when a 50 to 60 basis point, so less than half of that is a good number. Having said that, it's great when things turn out as well as they have. That represents about $50 million of incremental income over a passive return for the year ended 9/30/2016. Again, I also want to emphasize we're doing it on a good risk control basis. That's in the brown area there. You'll see the actual risk was about 3.6% versus a policy of 3.2. That is still an abnormally low number, and it's because over the last 5 years we were still pretty heavily invested in short-term fixed income. That will escalate over time, but still always within budget.
Over time, what do you, what's your time?
If you were to look at the asset allocation that we have in place today of 50% mm-hmm. equity, 35% fixed income, 15% real assets, I would expect on a five-year basis that will trend up to 6 to 7%. A lot depends upon what actually happens in the yep. marketplace, but over the course of 2, 3, 4 year period.
So we would be hitting our benchmarks.
We'd be hitting our benchmarks. Okay. Yes.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
Page 23, it just shows, again, gross returns for the legacy fund for the 1 and 5 years ended. The 1 year ended, you'll see on the top, large cap equity generated a 14% return, small cap about 17%. The domestic fixed income generated almost an 8% gross return before fees versus a target return of 5%. Just really strong numbers. We had a lot of wind in our sails for the 1 year ended 9/30/16. It's going to be a little bit more challenging in the fixed income environment that we've experienced in November and subsequently, but still a very nice equity market overall, particularly in the U.S.
On, you know, comparably, when you bench these, I had a conversation with a guy here a while back, but when you bench these against standard indexes, you know, Standard & Poor's, Dow, where are we, and that's something maybe for another conversation and stuff on it, but if off the top of your head, if you kind of know where
sure.
bench that at.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so let's say the S&P 500 abroad U.S. equity markets probably generated, let's just say, close to a 15% return last year. And if I don't think anybody was ever suggesting that we would be 100% invested in equities.
Yeah.
So if we just said 50% equities and 50% fixed income, the most widely used fixed income benchmark is the Barclays Aggregate that earned about a 5% return last year. So if you said 50% S&P 500, about a 15% return, and 50% in the Barclays Aggregate, about a 5% return, putting two together, it's about a 10% return. So okay. that's about okay. what we did. Okay. The reason why our benchmark is a little bit lower, it's 8.85 versus that 10 that I just did as a simple average, is because we're diversified into international equities. And I think over the long term, that's a prudent thing to do. Having said that, that was not the place to be for the last year. International equities have not performed as well for the 1 year ended 9/30/16. We also have other risk diversifiers such as infrastructure and real estate, and because of those have performed quite well, but not quite as well as the S&P 500. To get a 9% return on real estate, I think, is wonderful in the private markets, and I think it's a wonderful allocation, but it still underperforms the S&P 500 given the conditions that's been in the U.S. equity markets, particularly in large cap.
Well, then we're going to be interested. It'll be CIC the other day. They're thinking that inflation might start doing something and stuff, too, and some of this was based on an inflationary increase and stuff that hasn't really showed up either in the markets or any place. It's in the Dow, but that's the only place I've seen it is outside of that. So that's a...
Yes. Yes.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, keep going.
Page 24, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, again, green is good, yellow is cautionary. This literally lists every single one of our managers on this page and the next page that we have. So as case in point, the first one is LA Capital. It's about $254 million. We have invested in them. They invest in the growth equity, Russell 1000 growth equity. If you look for the far right column, the prior year, they generated a net return of about 4.73%, far exceeding its hurdle of 3%. So wonderfully. You jump right below that, though, LSV had a terrible year, had one of the worst years going back to 1998 when Darren and I took a look at it. Listen, we're long-term patient investors. Every one of our managers that we have in our portfolio, we believe will outperform over the long term. It does not mean that every single one of them is going to outperform for any defined time period. I think LSV is a good example. If you look at the LSV, you see that they hugely underperformed for the 1 year ended fiscal year 16. If you just jump over a little bit, though, you'll see that for the current fiscal year to date, ended October 31st, 2016, excuse me, you see that they generated a net return of 4.67% versus a benchmark of 1.88. So over the long term, LSV has done a nice job for us. Even though they were challenged for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2016, they're doing a good job long term for us. So big picture, what I want to focus on is just the top. Again, we're generating positive excess return for the current fiscal year to date ended October 31st, 2016. That top blue number in the box, in the blue box, is 2.74%, for that four-month period ended, surpassing our benchmark of 1.6 by a little bit over 1%. So is every single one of our managers outperforming? No. Are the vast majority of them? Yes. Particularly in, if you flip to the next page, we've probably had some of our strongest returns in fixed income from a relative standpoint, not from an absolute perspective. So if you look at fixed income on page 25 for the current fiscal year to date and for the prior year, we generated very strong benchmark beating returns for the last 4 months, 1.22 versus a negative 0.31. And for last fiscal year, it was 6.4 versus 6. So it's a big asset allocation, 35%. But our managers overall are doing a nice job for us. Fixed income is a wonderful alpha generator for us. And alpha, again, being beating a benchmark, being an beating a passive benchmark such as the Barclays aggregate. So I'll just pause for a moment. There's a lot of information on there. See if there's any questions.
Any questions? Go ahead, Senator.
I'm just wondering, can we get in here the information on the management fees that are coming out of the legacy fund?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Dotson-Rob.
Dotson, yes, Senator.
The next page, if you flip to page 26, specifically address investment fees. Now, I actually do have it for each individual manager. Generally, when we look at fees, we look at by asset class. It's not to say we're very engaged in wanting to make sure each single one of our individual managers do a great basis, but this is generally how we look at it on an asset class specific basis. We could follow up with it on a manager basis. So big picture, for the last two fiscal years, we spent about 33 bips for the fiscal year end of 2015. That's highlighted in green on the right-hand side. Mm-hmm. And last year, we spent about 36 basis points. So 0.33 and 0.36%. If we can generate significant alpha, you know, adhere to our policies and pay less than 40 to 50 basis points per annum, I think that's pretty good overall. So I'll just pause and see if that causes any concerns. On an absolute dollar perspective, for the fiscal year end of 2015, that's what's highlighted in the brown. It was about $10 million. If you jump over to the left, it was about $12.8 million that we spent last year. So that $12.8 million that we spent generated income of about, about $38 million. Not as much as we would like, but still positive overall.
Well,
I'll just jump in just for the sake of comparison. An average mutual fund investor pays 200 basis points to 2%. That's just to give you an idea. When you look at us at 33 basis points, you're not compared to an average mutual investor.
No, in committee, we've gone over that, you know, and that, you know, that's been one of the things, and we have, I know industries, you know, we've talked about this in the past, about where we're sitting, but I'll let the record show that was Kelly Schmidt, the treasurer, that was commenting. It was.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the next slide kind of distills it even more. So at the end of the day, we're paying a fair amount of money, right? We spent $12 million for management fees last year. That's a lot of money. If we, now this is not an apples to apples comparison because now I'm looking at for the 1 year ended September 30th, 2016, but I want to go to the most recent generated results that we have for the most recent quarter end. We generated $50 million of excess return by active management. So if we, that's an unrealistically high expectation to have going forward, but we're happy when we generate that. If we can spend $12 million on fees, get that $12 million back, and get another $12 million on top of it, kind of a two-for-one return on investment, I feel that that's pretty good, a pretty good return overall. This is a phenomenal period to generate $50 million return over the last year. Over the last 5 years in the far right column, it's about $85 million. Again, that's over a five-year period. So,
does it get easier to get into, you know, well, it's diversified, so it's, but the more money, you know, the percentages keep getting higher with the more money you're sticking in it and stuff on it. And
absolutely.
What's the challenges, I guess, is to keep the fees down, or does the fees drop when you start, or when you're doing that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, at our size, it's nice to have the amount of inflows that we had from the legacy fund over the last 5 years, right? When our fund is growing, it's literally doubled in size, SIB, client assets under management over the last 5 years. And that just gives us more bargaining power because our investment management firms can actually give us a price concession on a basis points, but still be actually be making more money because we're giving them more money to manage. So it's a win-win situation when we come to that situation. So I do think we're at a nice size to be able to leverage our relationships a great deal, and I think the State Investment Board does a wonderful job of that. Having said that, comes a point in times, I think, when you become so large, it's actually hard to access certain types of markets such as private equity and private debt. Having said that, we're far cry from ever reaching that, like a CalPERS or a CalSTRS, in which it's much more challenging. We're at a nice size to be able to get good pricing.
Okay. Any questions? Go ahead.
The last slide that I had in here, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, is just a summary of net earnings. This is through September 30th. I think what most people were kind of focusing on the earnings as defined by North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 21-1002, in which that's what you see is about $288.6 million. If you were to roll forward that one more month, it's slightly higher. It's about $289 million. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, that is actually all I had for my prepared remarks at this time.
Okay. Any questions, committee? One thing that we did is starting to come into focus. There was a Attorney General's opinion on what the earnings and how they were going to be treated. One of the things, though, that we are probably going to be faced with is, and that you probably, I don't know if you have that today or not, but we're going to have to balance out what the cost is to access these earnings versus looking at bonding against the earnings. I mean, we're going to have to get some information on that, because if we can borrow $300 million and pay very little for it versus taking this out and screwing up our investment, you know what it's going to cost us for simple language, and that's what it's going to do if we access this, you know, at the time. And I think that's, we're going to have to weigh those options and stuff on it. So I don't know if you can put that together or get somebody that can, because we're going to have to know, you know, I mean, we've had council run some scenarios, and I'm sure they've been a hold of you of what we're kind of, you know, and we know that, because they put about $289 million down on, you know, that, but it, you know, that ain't accessible, you know, I mean, without some pretty deep cuts or costs. And, but that's the way our budget's looking. I mean, we're going to be turning every stone over to see what we got. So that's going to be, we're going to have to present some options with this legacy fund and its earnings and stuff on it. So that's one of the comments I have. I don't know if anybody else got any words of wisdom or anything. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, you know, one thing that I'm hearing, Dave, is some of the political subdivisions are wondering if they can use part of the fixed asset allocation, and we would be making loans to political subs as part of the, and maybe you've come across that, Mr. Chair, as well. I just think it's something that we're going to have to be ready for, as you legislators are looking at doing the appropriation business. A lot of demand that we've seen for surge funding, infrastructure funding, and I've heard this talked about a couple times. Can we access the legacy fund via the fixed asset allocation piece of it to make loans with? So I'm just telling you to get ready for that question.
Well, committee, Dave, it was talked about last session, Representative Striley and me, and we looked at borrowing against money. One of the things, and this comes back to you, is the, you know, the Bank of North Dakota match loan, you know, do we play with that angle, or do we, you know, where the legacy fund isn't, you know, directly, you know, we're a backup, you know, I don't know how, if we could work, you know, do something in that direction using stuff that we already have in place, you know, and expanding it. I mean, without, you know, there's some options there that I know there's going to be some interest again, because it was talked about last session about borrowing against money, you know, and that's kind of what I brought up on this other part here too, is you know, I think we got to be a little careful about how we look at that. But yeah, there's been conversations because I've had a couple cities approach me about it. So we're chair is aware of issues out there and stuff. But the mechanics of it, I mean, that's up to people that know, you know, or how to put it together. I guess is going to be the big question, and then you know what the will of the legislature is on that conversation too. So,
well, Mr. Chair, how do you see this board's involvement in that question?
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, I mean, and this is, I can only speak personally. You know, I can't talk for everybody, but in a way, it does make sense. You know, I mean, what we're looking, and you know as well, I'm not telling anybody anything new, but we're looking at capitalizing dollars from, because it's better to spend it today than try to make something tomorrow. And what's this cost, you know, if we're beating benchmarks here, you know, dismantling an investment portfolio to do something, you know, is it going to cost us less to go into the, you know, to bond against it, you know, and do it that way and have, you know, because I'm not looking for grants out of this money. That's not, I mean, it'd be a loan type program and what your returns would be and stuff. I did have to see what was structured, how it was structured, you know, and what kind of returns we could look at it, you know, and then be very careful about how much of it we were going to use. But it, you know, me personally, I don't have a problem doing that. You know, I think it fits kind of the intent on the FIS, you know, because we're doing this in that match, you know, that match program through BND now, it, you know, it's kind of investing in ourselves, and that's what we'd be doing with this too. It'd be more the mechanics of, you know, the detail, devil's in the details is how that'd play out. And if you could sell it to the rest of the legislature, I mean, you know, because it, I think we're in a position, you know, to keep moving forward. We do have to look at some options that we do have, and it is nice to have some. We do have some options. It's just how we would want to do it and how much risk we'd want to, you know, that we'd want to take, I think, is what would be the key questions on that. Because I truthfully, like I said, I think there is kind of a feeling that, yeah, we'd like to look at it. It's just more of the details of how we make that work. It is. And I don't know if the other legislators have any comments. Senator Dotsenrod, I don't know what.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the advisory board, I think that idea of having using that fixed income part and not the whole thing, but a piece of it, and having it set aside to be sort of a guarantee or to provide money from that piece to subdivisions, with the idea that they would have to pay. It would be my idea would be it would be a revolving fund type of thing where money would be distributed to them and that they'd be paying it back, and to have money available where they would get it less expensively than they could any other place. I don't know just how you'd structure that. Who would if the Bank of North Dakota would have a way to do it, or some other organization.
It's in the details.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so right now the BND match loan CD program, if it's 5% of the $4 billion legacy fund, that's $200 million, which coincides with the stated limit in a dollar basis. Last time it was noted in the minutes for the state investment board. It's obviously something that we'd work with the advisory board, with legislative council, with the state investment board, in order to you know, move it forward with the proper direction and guidance by the advisory board here. Having said that, there is untapped capacity in the BND match loan CD program right now. It's a little under 80 versus 200. So,
yeah. Well, and like I said, committee, you know, it's something that, you know, we've looked at, you know, it is hard, and we're going to have to, you know, this fund is a perpetual fund, you know, people probably don't, but it is. I mean, there's no end date to this fund. And so I think it's how we invest in it, but also how we use it. I mean, to keep people, you know, the citizens in North Dakota, because it is their money, how it's used. And so, you know, I don't think, you know, talking to other legislators, and I've been contacted by municipalities that have shown some interest in how, you know, if there is some options or something, and, you know, and we'd have, like I said, it, you know, it's something that isn't foreign, you know, but I think we'd have to figure out how we'd structure it so it'd work and so we wouldn't, you know, put what we are, what we would have and at risk and stuff on it. And I, you know, it's something that, you know, we truthfully, when this fund first started, I know the former chairman of this committee had a whole book of municipalities and what bonds they had taken out and what owed and stuff like that. And we looked at it, you know, and I don't think we wanted to get into the direct competition though of the bond market itself, you know, and stuff itself, you know, but on the other side of the coin, it is something that, you know, we need to look at and see if we're competitive or if we could structure it that there is a need out there to do that, you know. And so it's something could, you know, like I said, we're not, you know, it's tough, you know, you don't want to, you know, be excess, but you don't want to be under and take a risk. You know, I mean, it's going to have to be structured so the risk reward is the same as what any, pretty much anybody else is willing to take and stuff on it, in my mind. You know, I mean, so I, you know, I guess it's something if there is a demand, you know, and we'll find out. Like I said, I know I've talked to a couple legislators today, actually, and, you know, looking at reviving that conversation again. So it's something that's being talked about. So we'll see what the session brings forward and stuff on it and go from there. Because I don't think this committee's would be in a position to do any recommendation with this close to the legislative session. I mean, we're not going to make any suggestions today or anything, but I think that, you know, we'll see how the session progresses, and if there is some interest, we'll have to, we might wind up meeting again here during the session, which isn't a problem, but just to see, you know, when we get into the details of how, you know, if we do go forward with this. So any questions or comments?
Chairman, I guess my only comment would be that throughout this last campaign, everyone that I spoke with or any of our campaign promises, whether it didn't matter which party, was to make sure that we maintain the integrity of the legacy fund, that we don't jeopardize it in any means, because their intent is certainly a legacy. It's the future. It's not now. It's not to get bail your butts out because you screwed up, because that's what we're getting. You guys spent beyond your means, and now you're going to use this to back yourselves up. And so that was a difficult part where we had to say, you know what, you know, folks, this is what you voted for. And so when we get to that point where we start talking about shifting dollars, the concern will be that the money will be there and the future will be there. And so, you know, and I have to agree with the chairman that that's certainly not our committee that's going to decide this. We're just kind of here facilitating how this fund moves forward, but there will be bigger and bolder votes that will move this and change our minds. But that's what I heard, and I think, you know, in my mind, we're going to have to stick as close to maintaining that fund and growing it to, well, I guess in my case would be my grandchildren, because my children are getting old. I want the grandchildren to who are going to settle back in North Dakota to enjoy this. So that would be my comment.
Anything else, Nick? I think that's
enough. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Okay. Next on the agenda, thank you, Dave. That concludes the Retirement Investment Office's presentation. Next up, we have the State Treasurer, who's got a report.
I'm going to put this back on page 28 for you. Well, Mr. Chairman, as many of you have heard, we requested an Attorney General's opinion relating to the Legacy Fund. The reason that we went for that opinion is because the Constitution is silent relating to the dollars that were earned prior to 2017-19, or more defined as from 2015 to 2017. And so the question was, is do those become part of the corpus or part of the principal of the fund, which requires supermajority vote, or will some of those dollars be available through the transfer in which we made. I believe on this slide up here, you'll see the September 30th, that number should be 2016 instead of 2017. And so the $288 million that you're seeing now, those are the dollars that were being discussed in that opinion, and those dollars now will become part of the corpus or part of the principal of the fund. One of the challenges that we are also discussing in my office relating to the transfer of the earnings, which will be earned from July 1st of 2017 until June of 2019. Those are the earnings that will be transferred into the general fund from my office. The question will be, it does come at the end of the biennium, and what's going to happen during this next legislative session is there will likely be appropriations made based on the assumption of the earnings of that fund. So we are going to be spending dollars without having dollars in the general fund. Then you add that to the factor of what just passed with the Foundation Aid Stabilization Fund, and we could see that fund go down to $300 million, of which the remaining $300 has to stay. But that's also included in the general fund bucket at the Bank of North Dakota, which we use to cash flow. And then you also look at the Highway Distribution Fund, which has been reducing down at big levels. So our cash flow challenges are going to be very, very, very challenging, for lack of a better word, as we get into that 17-19 session, because folks are going to be spending money that isn't there yet. And so those are things that we're talking about in our office, because we're going to see the reduction in the general fund. As far as the opinion, I think it speaks for itself. I don't believe it was any of a surprise to anyone in the manner in which the opinion came out. For us, it was clarification of the law and the silence of the Constitution. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Heidemeyer.
Kelly, you talked about the Foundation Aid Stabilization Fund,
mm-hmm.
with $300 million being used for future foundation aid payments. Is that right?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Heidemeyer, but $300, the way the constitutional mm-hmm. revision was written, can be used for anything relating to education as the legislature sees fit.
Okay, so right now there's
$600 million.
$300 million will be set aside for future draws to support. Mm-hmm.
The balance of $300 million will stay, but
the other $300 million could go for school construction,
mm-hmm.
scholarships,
yep,
as 2039 lays out.
Mm-hmm. And in our world, it doesn't make any difference how it goes or what it goes.
Yeah.
It's just going. And the fact that we won't have it in the general fund to cash flow. I mean, once it's moved into another program, it may not be in that general fund bucket any longer for us to cash flow.
Okay.
That's the concern. And then you add to that, like I mentioned, if we have $180 million of earnings that's expected to come into the general fund and is appropriated during the next biennium, that's $180 million we're going to have to float until we get it at the end of the biennium. And then you add to the fact that the Highway Distribution Fund, we're seeing that come down. And those are the funds that we use to manage cash in the general fund. And so as we see all those numbers come down, that will bring a challenge to us. And it will bring a challenge because the bank is going to see that come
mm-hmm.
down. The buckets may change, but to us, it's the cash in the general fund.
Yeah,
we will.
And as we spoke earlier, your office is going to try to get something put together. I mean, because it is going to get to be a problem to follow this as
mm-hmm.
we go forward here. And that's one of the concerning aspects of it, because what we've seen from council with their projections of cost to continue and everything
mm-hmm.
that we've had, you know, that's where this whole thing is going to get to
and
be
an
interesting of how mm-hmm. to manage this going forward. You know, I mean, because we've been at some pretty decent, fairly high levels.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, and when you start getting where you're doing $100 million draws, and
mm-hmm.
doesn't take long to disappear. So we're gonna have to have some, by the time session gets going,
we'll be putting together some communication and some graphics to help be able to illustrate the challenges of what we're going to be doing there. I would also like to thank the chair for just bringing up the topic relating to the liquidation of these earnings, because as a member of the State Investment Board, that is something that has been very much a concern to me, because if we are going to, and we address this as a legislative piece relating to the Budget Stabilization Fund, there was a time where we would just move the money into the general fund and we turn around and we move it back to the Budget Stabilization Fund under the purview of the State Investment Board. And every time you move money, you have transaction costs and you could lose opportunity in your investing. So if we are going to be looking at, you know, a possibility where we're not going to be appropriating dollars from the legacy fund, it would be beneficial to the fund itself and a cost savings to be able to not just move that money for the sake of moving it. The Constitution requires us to move that money, but I believe there may be an opportunity to put in some legislation that could help us to retain it there. You know, you buy a stock at a low cost and then you sell it on a certain day just because you're supposed to sell it on a certain date. That isn't real good, that is not good investing practice. So I appreciate the comment.
Well, like I said, we're going to have to look into options of what we're at here and stuff on it, because it, you know, when you do have cash, you do have options. Excuse my French there, but you do have options, and I think that's what we're going to have to look at. I don't have a problem if the reward risk ratio is where you make something. I don't have a problem getting creative that way, but I think that we got to feel comfortable doing that, and then be able to sell it to the rest of the legislature in the process of it. I think
we're all maintaining our fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you got to convince 51% of the House and that many in the Senate that it's a good idea. That some days becomes the challenge. It does. So, but we're going to have good information. You know, Dave, you understand where we're coming from, because we're going to have some options and take a look at where we're at with this. Mm-hmm. So, any other comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any interested parties in the audience that... Any discussion? Committee? No? Any motions?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded by Representative Crate. Second was Senator Klein. Well, thank you for the meeting, and it's going to be one of those where we might be talking to each other a little more than usual. So anyways, this meeting's adjourned. Thanks.